podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield wrap after Liverpool have won the FA Cup. I've got Kev Walsh, I've got Mo Stewart, and I've got Stu Wright. Liverpool have won the FA Cup. Liverpool deserve to win the FA Cup. Liverpool were the better side against Chelsea by some distance. It took penalty kicks. Stu Wright, highs and lows all over the place. How did you feel after Sadio missed?
Oh, on my knees. I mean, you think it's gone, don't you? You're kind of trying to make your peace with it. You're not making your peace with it, but you're trying to, you know, I'm trying to put it into perspective. But then the big man, you know, he pulls out an absolute blinding save, which I didn't see coming, actually, because I didn't think he was getting, you know, as close to the previous penalties as I'd like. And I thought he looked tired. You know, it was a long day. It was a hot day.
Their keeper got cramp.
I was going to say, that was the maddest thing I've ever seen in a football match. Yeah. The goalie claims to have cramp. Honestly, I wanted to jump on and strangle him.
The keeper had cramp. I couldn't believe it when the keeper was down with cramp. It was on about 65 as well. What have you been doing before this game? Has he played another? He's got a Saturday morning game when he plays out. That's what I was wondering. I play centre mid on a Saturday morning, to be honest with you, lads.
Just made me mate, like, but yeah. It's hard cramp.
It's hard cramp.
Good
yeah.
standard.
Yeah. A couple of lads are playing National League in there. Yeah. Unbelievable when their keeper got cramp. But I do think that there's been exertions on everyone.
It was a solid hand that he gets to that at Alisson. And, you know, we live again, we dream again, and then we all see the Greek scouts are stepping forward, and you think to yourself, was this a move? Is this why? Because, I mean, I didn't know if Robertson was injured or not when he got brought off, or he was just goosed.
He was goosed. Mm-hmm. You know, it was what he doesn't sprint for, where I think Klopp would like him to be 10 yards further forward, and then he can't get there, and it felt like Klopp went, his race is run there.
Yeah,
and
it Robertson still felt himself, like a risk, like, though. Come on, still felt like a risk, you know. I didn't think, I don't know, you want to rely on the experience in those situations, don't you? And you're thinking, oh, you know, Costas is coming on, but, you know, he's a good player, he's fresh, okay. And then he comes up, strides up to take that seventh penalty, and you think, is this a move? Does the manager know something we don't? Has he been doing a little bits in training on pens? And he said after the game, didn't he? The manager said to me, what number do you want? And I said, number seven. And the manager said to him back, why so late? So, you know, maybe he did, you know, think he could take one of the earlier ones, but he was confident. And to see him slot that, incredible, absolute pure joy. You know, I was like leaping in the air, nearly throwing my daughter up and you know, causing carnage. Absolutely just bedlam in my house. And then, you know, to watch Costas become a folk hero. Mm-hmm. In the moments that followed, just incredible.
It was the perfect
left backs win cups.
Yeah, and I love the fact that, like, the first choice left back should have won in 90 minutes, and the backup's like, "Oh, no worries, I've got this." And he was the perfect guy to do it. Just everything about that moment. It was the energy he brought to it. The fact that he didn't know that it was Chelsea fans were there, and then he realised the Chelsea fans were there, and then he went straight into it and gave them the cup tears, and then made the whole team follow around before coming back to us. It was just perfect. And again, this season, with so many great games, so many games to win, has so many different plans of heroes.
Yeah.
And he's got his moment now. I love it when someone gets a moment. When we're doing the season review, it's like, oh yeah, that was the Costas moment. Obviously, for Alisson as well. Although, I didn't see Alisson because I was in the Pokes toilets during all of Chelsea's penalties. The reason was because I hadn't been to the toilet for the whole game. And then I realised that and thought, okay, I need to go to the toilet. And then I spoke quite a mist. So then everyone told me I had to keep going. No. But it was only for Chelsea penalties. I came back out for Liverpool penalties and go back in for Chelsea penalties. And then for Mason Mount's one, Mary actually did the same thing. And we both went into the toilet. So then heard the cheer and then just had a moment in the corridor with the toilets and a big hug. It was just fantastic. It was harder than it should have been when you think about the way the game went. And I don't know why. We were just destined not to beat Chelsea for some reason this season, but we got the results that mattered.
We got the results that matters, Kev. In the ground, it was just absolutely phenomenal when the penalty goes in, obviously. What you got to see, I think, which is really interesting, and it's easy to do it when you win, but Milner had done the thing with The Athletic the day before the interview with Shearer, where he said, "This dressing room, it's brilliant, the best dressing room I've ever been in." He says, "People like me always say things like that, but I'm assuring you it's true." And you just got to say, I think, all the way through the pens, the aftermath of the pens, every single one of them, the lads who'd gone off, the lads who didn't feature at all, every single one of them was backing one another. There was just unreal amounts of togetherness, I thought, from Liverpool, and that's part of the reason why they are where they are.
Yeah, they love it, don't they?
They love each other, you know what I mean? Like Thiago and Salah and that, yeah.
They love each other, they love us as well. Like, Jordan the penalties, I see less than you did. I never watch our penalties anyway. So I sat down on the chair behind Ben, and then I was watching theirs. And then when Manny missed our fifth, my head just completely fell off. So then I didn't watch anymore. And I had to put my fingers in my ears, and I was just, people rubbed me head, and I was like, fuck off and leave me alone. I don't want to know. Uh-huh. Just leave me here, and I'll let me know who's got the cup in a bit. Honestly, my head had just totally gone by that stage. But then afterwards, what an end it was to be in. Them smoke bombs and flares, mate, brilliant. And the atmosphere in there, absolutely phenomenal. But the best bit's just when the players come over and you can just see they're absolutely made up. Mm-hmm. They love, you've said it before about Salah against City, where he's just looking going, yeah, I've given this moment of bedlam. And the moment of bedlam after goal is boss, but it's different when you've just got the full end there and the goal's being complete and we're all made up. They're made up, we're made up, and it's just going off to fuck. And then he's playing like Build Me Up Buttercup or something and the whole end singing it. Yeah, unbelievable.
You to me and everything was something
that
special.
Was, you to me and everything, honestly, I was like, this is the best moment ever, this, mate. The place you'll ever walk alone as far as
they get there all together in the end. Listen, download the app if you haven't done so, the Anfield Rap app. And we've got a live show coming up at Liverpool Saturday night, Mountford Hall. Tickets available, get them. We're going to be talking about people's favourite game of the season. We've got all sorts of plans laid out for that one, loads and loads of bits and pieces, and I think it's seated as well, so you should be able to sit down for parts of it, but you'll be on your feet for other parts as well, because it is going to be a huge celebration of this great side. It's been a pleasure. That's at Manford Hall, and this is really hard to talk about. We're live in London on July the 9th. I know, if you're listening to this, July the 9th feels like it's never going to happen.
Is there even going to be a July? Are we sure about that?
It would be more like sensible if I said we're doing a live show on Mars, like that I feel more plausible than the idea of July the 9th. Oh, but if you can get to London, we're in Hackney Earth, or if you're around, it will be looking back on this season and obviously looking ahead to next. There'll be loads going on. Do check all of that out. We will go back to the start on this one. And Stu, it was a game where Liverpool were just the better side, and I didn't think I'd be saying that unless we'd won the game. Just sort of know what I mean. Like, I think that I felt if Liverpool were the better side, they would win in 90 minutes. And when I saw the teams, I thought if Liverpool are the better side, they'll win this in 90 minutes. It is simply in front of goal, I think, throughout the 90, but certainly in the first sort of half an hour, three quarters of an hour of the game, where Liverpool are in any way lacking. Everything else, the extent to which Chelsea are the third best team in the country, no shadow of a doubt, they look like they're a division away from Liverpool in that first half. They really did. Liverpool were excellent.
Yeah, I mean, particularly that first 20, whatever it was. I mean, it was like muscle memory for them from the City semi-final.
Yeah.
They absolutely flew out the traps. Complete domination. I mean, Chelsea didn't know what hit them. They couldn't get out. The manager was absolutely losing it on the touchline, wasn't he? Begging them to get out. But they were too scared to get out. They were too fearful of the space they'd leave him behind for people like Mo. Which, by the way, obviously, I think Mo's departure, I think, you know, later in the game does allow them to be able to step out with a bit more confidence, because we don't have the same kind of pace on that side, and it's no coincidence that Alonso becomes their main outlet, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you know, that start to the game, it deserved a goal. It deserved more than one goal. It was complete and utter domination. It was frightening to watch, and I'm a red. You know what I mean? I was frightened of them. Every single one of them knew the jobs, and I almost had a feeling that, I'm not even sure this has come from the manager, this. I think they just thought, we're having this. We're absolutely going for them. We're going to try and kill this early. I also think that the team the manager picks forces that a little bit as well, because I like you, Neil. I know you said earlier on in the week that you had a suspicion that Diaz might be held back.
Diaz or Mane, that he might hold one back.
I felt the same. I felt it would be Diaz, just simply so that he could destroy them later in the game. What a weapon to have coming off the bench. But when he plays that 11, which really felt like his strongest 11 available, it did feel like Liverpool knew that they were going to try and have to win it in the 90. The last thing that he wanted was to have an extra time. But yeah, Chelsea just didn't know what hit them.
Kev, there's 4 minutes. There's the Diaz gets in, nearly puts Thiago in right the way in front of goal. I'm thinking, God, we're on top here. Yeah. Then 4 minutes after that, he does Shalabar again. The cutback's just behind Salah this time. And then not long after that, there's the ball from Alexander-Arnold into Diaz, which is just one of the greatest passes Wembley has ever seen. The only shame is he doesn't convert.
we can still appreciate the beauty of the ball. It is unreal what he does to get Diaz in one-on-one.
Yeah, but all of them were brilliant, though, weren't they? To be honest, I can't even remember the particular send pass you're on.
Because you played so many.
Yeah, and also I was fucking bladdered and I was dead low down, so it's one of them, isn't it? But in that first 20 minutes, I was like used to, I was thinking, fuck me, we are on this, yeah? Mm. And I was thinking to myself, this feels like a bit of a blueprint for what they're going to try and do to Real Madrid as well, because like, I think they're going to, against Chelsea, you know, they're going to sort of sit in, and I think Real will, but won't at the same time. I think we'll be going for that type of, like, get at them early and see if we can score. When it didn't happen after 20 minutes, a bit of me was like, oh, here we go again, yeah? And I think to myself, it's obviously hindsight, but if Jota had been in there, it just feels like one of them chances would have dropped to him. No, rather, the others are like, they make different runs, whereas Jota just sort of instinctively knows where to be in and around the box, doesn't he? I don't think he's great outside the box, but if you put him between them sticks, mate, he's going to be where the ball's going to be. And I was thinking to myself, oh, it'd just be like these to get one. But then, when I was watching him, I was like, how are these going to get a goal? You got literally no chance. They were lumping it up to Lukaku, and he's been a good player in the past, but he's a shadow of former self. And when he comes up against a player like Virgil van Dijk and Kanate, he's got no chance, mate. No chance.
The Trent thing, you know, I think that deserves a bit of comment. I mean, the ball, I'm sorry you didn't see it, Kev. It was unbelievable.
It was incredible.
It was unbelievable. And
I probably clapped it at the time.
Played, lad. Next thing. What have you done for me lately, dickhead?
It wasn't just his ball either. The ball out from the keeper.
But Alisson did the same thing. Yeah, it was another outside of the football.
Tremendous. And it would have been goal of the season. I mean, you just that game would have been over. Yeah. You know, that competition would have been over straight away. But the same thing, where he plays the ball from, he plays the ball from the halfway line, centre midfield. That's where he finds himself, and that's not by accident. We've commented on that in earlier shows, much earlier on the season, about the tactical innovation that the coaching staff have made there to get Trent freed into the centre of the park. And it's worked. It's worked no end this season. He's still the second highest assist player in the Premier League. He's only one behind Mo, and I suspect if Mo doesn't play the last couple of games, that'll change anyway. And you know, I think Trent's previous seasons have seen him, you know, doing a great job at right back, but doing an unbelievable job down the right wing, and you know, that weapon he's got of a right foot. But teams know it. They were able to prepare for it this season, and what they weren't able to anticipate, what they weren't able to prepare for this season, and they're still struggling to prepare for, is now how he drifts when we're in play. He drifts into the centre of the midfield and finds himself in space because no one's picking him up. And the hardest blow to stop in football or in any sport is the one you don't see coming. And Trent is the dagger behind the shield that is our midfield. Yeah. That's what he is now. And that ball was just the perfect embodiment of that tackle.
I'm definitely going to have to watch this game back, aren't I? Just for the pass. Not even asked about the pass. I just want to see this pass now.
The thing I want to bring up about Trent, though, is at the other end. Because that's the point where people acknowledge now that he is a generational talent going forward now. But people always still have to do that. But yes, there's the defending. He was remarkable. Yeah. Defensively, every time you needed him to be there, he was there. At times you looked like he had to come from far, like they'd got the jump on him and he had to recover, and he recovered.
He was Liverpool's best defender, and that was a really high bar, by exactly. The way, because Kanate was incredible.
Excellent.
I thought so, and it was really noticeable to me that he was so keenly aware that Chelsea's game plan was about him, what they do when he's not around. So he's like, I damn sure have to make sure I'm just going to be always around. And he was always around for 120 minutes. He was always around. And then he puts the pen in as well. And the moment of victory where you see everyone running towards the Chelsea fans, you do see Trent basically just crumple in a heap on the floor. He just puts his arm up and just kind of curves down because he's got nothing left. He's literally got nothing left. And people talk about all the whole, yeah, he's completed football. He's completed the set thing. I feel like that was kind of something that he was aware of as well, and he wanted to do it. And in that moment, he's like, damn, I have done it, and we have done it. And yeah, I was really proud of him in that moment, because to do the things that you aren't going to get celebrated for, if he was just a good defender, he wouldn't be as celebrated as he is. So doing the defensive stuff is still kind of like the secondary, the less glamorous part of his job. But he knows it's just as important, and he proved it.
That also, it's a total... Anyone who watches him knows it's a total fallacy that he can't defend. If you actually watch football and you understand football, there's no better right backs in the country than him. Like, there might be players of a similar standard when it comes to defending. But that's a high bar. Reece James is a good right back.
Yep.
But he's only as good as Trent.
Kyle Walker's a good right back.
Exactly, but he's only as good as Trent. And none of them offer even half of what he does going forward. And as you said, Stu, I think it's so noticeable, especially with the last few games. I don't know whether the stats are bearing out, like, but he feels to me much, much more sensible now. Like, he used to make an overlapping run on the right-hand side of Mo, and I swear he hasn't done that for about six games because, as you said, he's just stepped into that midfield role. And it's like they've gone, oh yeah, well, everyone knows what I'm going to do there now. So I'll just go in there and just do whatever I want with the ball. And he's unbelievable. Like, I honestly think when he doesn't play well, he's the one player when he doesn't play well, Liverpool don't play well. Mm-hmm. And for a right back, that's unbelievable.
He is just terrific all the way through the game, Stu. You mentioned the penalty as well that he takes when he steps up. You're left with him, I think, you know, this idea of he's completed the set. The next sentence of this is, he's actually just been nominated for Young Player of the Year. Like, he's actually just... And I think that's unfair, by the way, on everyone else. Like, there should be a rule that if you've played over 100 senior games, you shouldn't be able to be. But just to put that in the picture, he's just been nominated for Young Player of the Year. That is absolutely ridiculous, given, one, the medal collection, but also, two, the level.
Yeah, it's crackers. It's crackers. I mean, I was saying before, like, he's got some come down later in life, you know. Yeah, honest to God, I was watching him after the game, and you know, this is the benefit, I suppose, of being able to watch it on telly. But my God, I would have swapped to go see Kev, no problem. But he looked, he was strolling around the pitch after we'd won it, and everyone's dancing with the cup, everyone's made up, and he looked like he was having an out of body experience. He looked shell shocked. I mean, he must have been shattered because he's, I mean, as we said,
it's before, so many sprints, it's so many.
You know, during the celebrations, right, him and Robertson just sat on the floor, you know, like after they'd done their cup lift and everyone else was doing it, everyone else was like milling around, made up, and them two just sat on the floor next to each other just talking, because they must have just both been fucked.
Yeah. And we've been like that as fans, haven't we? We've been at the Champions League finals where
I was like that yesterday at the FA Cup final.
The party's going on around you, but you've just got nothing left, have you? You know, and it's not an anti-climax or anything like that, but you've just literally got nothing left in the tank, and it was all going on around him. And as we said before, he's like playing three positions now in one. 120 minutes, baking hot day. He's had an unbelievable performance. I mean, Diaz got man of the match, and you know, I can't knock that. What a player he is. But you know, I don't think anyone would have been arguing if Trent had got it.
The what a player he is bit, Mo, is he's undoubtedly absolutely terrific. But what I think you see in that first half, we mentioned the Trent ball. There's one where Mane kept dropping in. I thought Mane was great. Yeah. Get some space, plays a lovely ball to him. And it is, obviously, you've got to be the player to make the run. And you've got to be the ability to get away from a man. And once you're past him, stay away from him and all of that. But for me, he was in that first stretch where Liverpool were very on top. And then again in the second half, he's an outlet.
He is. And it was really interesting the way that Chelsea game planned against him. Because earlier on, he was getting loads of space. Like, there was a good 10-15 metres between him and the defender when he gets the ball, so he can run at them, and they're already backing off. Whereas second half, they tried to get closer to him, they tried to get in his face, and he just had the close control and the ability to shield the ball, look around, find the next red shirt, and just keep it moving. And once he was able to do that, and they realised that the compression up on him wasn't going to affect him, they dropped off again. And then he was able to run at them again. And so he didn't give them a break at any point in the game. He was relentless. And I think that's possibly my favourite thing about him in a long, long list, is that relentlessness, is the fact that we've just got another guy who gets a punch in the face and keeps running. And that's basically us.
I reckon he loves it as well, you know. Mm-hmm. Like the punch in the face thing. I reckon he's like, go ahead, what are you going to try and do?
Yeah.
Watch this then. Honestly, he just, whatever challenge gets put in front of him, he just absolutely loves it. And he's one of them players, you can't help but smile when you watch him play football, because he does it with a smile himself. And you can just see, he just wants to push the boundaries over and over again.
I do wish he'd scored, almost, because you could see that, like, that performance deserved a goal to crown it.
Yeah.
But by the same token, maybe he's saving that for the next final.
He's due a goal in a final. It is fair to say, Stu, as Kev says, he's a joy to watch. I'm intrigued by the way he does adapt his performance. I'm getting in like this. They've changed that. Oh, now watch this. And that's where the goals nearly come from for him. And that's why, you know, I think at times when you see, I've seen a lot of wingers who one could describe as an outlet at different points in the career, or even in different games. And then someone works out how they're an outlet
and stops it and makes it a lot harder for them. This fella, people, you've got one of the best coaches in the world there with an excellent right back, as has already been said, with Reece James. They're trying to solve this problem live. They begin to sort of solve it, and then he just sets them another problem. And that's why I think he is as exciting as he is, in that you just can't get a handle on him. He's not a one-trick pony, but he's a pony who's got a million tricks.
Yeah, he has. And the thing is, it's quantifiable to be able to see what he can do with the ball and the movement that he makes and how he's relentless going after a man time and time again. But what is more difficult to see, but it's so there, it's so patently obvious that it's there, is his intelligence. His intelligence as a footballer to be able to adapt in game is remarkable. His movement is so intelligent. He's so aware of the players around him as well. But he understands, most importantly, his role. And his role is that relentlessness, isn't it? It's that I am going to destroy you every single time. If you're lining up against him, I was saying this to my missus, if you're lining up against him,
I bet your missus was like, that fucking again.
Couldn't we have got him a ticket for this one? Jesus.
You're going to pub to watch the next one.
Yeah,
no, I'm not watching the European Cup final.
No one's trying to get my missus, get me a ticket to my missus, I'll tell you. But if you're lining up against him, if you're the defender that's got to mark him, it must be absolutely terrifying. It must be soul destroying, because you know that he has decided that every time he's got the ball, he is going to go at you. He's going to try and undress you. He's going to absolutely do everything within his power to destroy you today.
That's the worst thing for a defender, isn't it? It's knowing that they're great, but the fear of, fucking hell, mate, he could make me look like an absolute dickhead here.
Yeah.
And he can do, and he loves to do it as well. It's great to do. But the other thing is with him, he does all this, so the defender's head is up his arse, so then his mate has to come over and cover him. And then he's like, well, I can't come that far, because there's Manny.
Yeah.
And there's Salah's over there as well, so the whole team's just like, shit, what do we do? And that's why, as you said before, Stu, they were, in the first half, they might as well just stood on the goal line, mate, and they just could not get out. Because, as you say, the manager's saying to them, move up. But if you're one of the defenders, you're going, move up to where would you like me to go to? Because if I leave these even 5 yards in behind me, we've had it. We cannot get out. And that must just be, like, how have they done it for 120 minutes? I don't know. Just the thought of it's tiring.
Not even just, we've had it. I've had it. He's going to make a show of me. Yep. If I move up, he is going to absolutely make a show of me here.
What I think is dead interesting just on Diaz is he's not far away from the thing I've said, I think, for 3 years in a very boring way about Salah, which is you can have fullbacks you come away from and think he played well there. And simultaneously, our lad got in over and over and over again and did the untold damage. Like, I came away thinking, God, Reece James is some player. And then the man of the match is his direct opposite number, who probably should have scored on about 3 occasions or created great opportunities. And I'm simultaneously going, tell you what, Reece James, what a footballer he is. Really impressed with him.
Relentless. That's the thing. Like, because you look at the stats and you think, oh, wow, Reece James made 6 successful tackles. That's fantastic. He had to make 20. And then he got 6 right and the other 14, he flew past him. And again, we talk about the idea of being relentless at this stage of the season. And this was why a lot of us were saying maybe he comes on late. But the fact that we had that moment, and it was clearly that we were trying to kill it early or get the goal early, and it didn't happen. And yet we had to go to plan B, C, D. And even at the times when Chelsea did start to create chances, I was still, my hand was still straight. I still believe that we had a way in, even before we went to penalties.
Well, I think on that, Mo, Chelsea, Salah goes off. We'll come back around onto that. Jota has a great opportunity just before half-time. I think it's probably Liverpool's best pure opportunity of the game, not least because he's beat the keeper. Mm-hmm. The keeper's committed, and he does everything right. Just gets a bit too much on it. It's a great opportunity. They fly out second half. And in lots of ways, one of the most impressive things Liverpool do is they weather that storm, and it takes a bit of weathering, and then they just grab control of the game back. It's like Chelsea got to have 8 minutes.
Yeah.
You've had your go now. That was your go. And for me, you know, the way Liverpool just slowly and then quickly grab control of the game back, it's a bit of graft, and then suddenly, no, now this is all ours again, is really impressive. And the keeper does well in that period as well. But I think that was Chelsea's spell, 8 minutes after halftime.
Yeah, and we've got this whole way of being able to bend without breaking, and it seems to have served us really well in the latter stages of the season, because we aren't able to go to the well and get that level of performance we had early on the season, because they are all tired. They are all going on fumes. But there's just refusing to lose in these big games. And you saw it in that moment. Again, what I was saying before about Trent, just coming in at the right moment to make tackles, make clearance. There's always that last man to do it. There's, even when Chelsea thought that they were in, then Alisson comes to the party and he blocked. I mean, we forget about that he got studded from Alonso early on.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was just a bit like, oh God, I hope he's not hampered or anything. Not a bit of it. He was still sprightly, springing around wherever he needed to be, smothering the ball. And I think I overplay the kind of mentality monsters part of it, but I think there's a trust that everyone has in each other that allows them to dig out to those points, because it means that you can be like, oh, come on, he's beat him there, but he's not going to necessarily beat him the next time.
I think there's trust, but I think there's also a thing, Kev, where it doesn't matter what team it is, apart from possibly just the lads who might pip us to the title, where we have a bit of an...
who shall not be named.
Yes, they have a bit of... I think we have a bit of an element of, yeah, but they can't keep this up. And I think we do it almost everyone we play against, whenever they do get on top, I think there's something now in this Liverpool side with one another where there's an element of, yeah, but they can't keep this up. And in a minute, it'll be back to us.
Yeah, but that, again, that comes from the fact, you said there Chelsea have like 8 minutes or something. Chelsea are a good team, as you said, they're the third best team in the country, but they're still only allowed to have 8 minutes. And they get them 8 minutes because... in every game of football is going to be a bit of ebb and a bit of flow, but they only get 8 minutes because they're shattered from all the time. For the rest of the time, we've just been absolutely pummeling them. Like we didn't get the goal yesterday, but it's fair to say after that first 20 minutes, if we'd have been 2 or 3 goals up, it would have been a cakewalk and people would have been saying that's one of the greatest FA Cup final performances of all time because of who we were playing. And that didn't happen, but because of that 20 minute bombardment and then the fear of them even trying to get out, when they do get their 8 minutes, as you said, everyone knows, like, we know what's going on now, but even you know that in 5 minutes time, mm-hmm. we'll be back up the other end doing it back to you. And to do it to a team like Chelsea, it's like, wow, how did you manage that? But then, as you say, we do it to absolutely everyone besides City. And the reason we can't do it to City is because they're fantastic. They're as good as we are. I'm not sure they're better than us. Obviously, clearly, if they win the league, then they have been better than us over the course of a season. But it's such a fine margin that it's just two teams going at it toe-to-toe. And when you've got players like they've got and like we've got, you're going to have like games where the others don't even get a kick. But in an FA Cup final against Chelsea, they're going to get some moments. But for Chelsea to come out of a game, and as you said, the 120-minute game, they had 8 minutes. That just shows the level that Liverpool are playing.
I think that's so interesting, that the psychology there for them, that they know. And from what you're saying there, Kev, you know, they know when they've got that 8 minutes. When they're in the moment there, they know that it's going to go the other way again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They know it's just a matter of time, but this is a limited window that you've got against Liverpool. So we've got to make it count. And the pressure that puts on them in those circumstances as well, the pressure that puts on their strikers as well, it's immense, that, isn't it? Because they've got to carry the weight of that football game in a matter of moments, or it's going to get taken away from them. That's huge. And if you go into a football match knowing that you might get a window, and if you get a window, that it's going to be a very, very small one.
And even
if you
in
don't
that window,
it, forget
yeah.
it.
Even in that window, you've still got to be Virgil van Dijk and Alisson Becker.
Yeah. So, I mean, and even in that window as well, Liverpool can undress you because they've got, you know, the wingers who can absolutely, you know, on the counter attack just exactly. destroy you. Yeah. We've said it before, you know, sometimes Liverpool are the most dangerous when a team have got a corner against us, you know. So it's a frightening prospect for any team to play against us. I mean, on what you're saying there, I think over the course of the season as well, the City thing, by the way, I don't think City are better than us. I think
we're a similar level. They play a different style of football than us, and I'd much rather watch our style of football, by the way. And I think that's why hopefully we'll finish this season. We'll have 2 European Cups in the time that they've won four leagues in 5 years, we'll have a league title and 2 European Cups. And you ask any football fan, would they prefer 4 leagues out of 5 or 1 league and 2 European Cups? I know what they're saying. City fans will tell you they don't want they're not asked about the Champions League, but it's a load of shit because that's the one you want. And the way that they play is fantastic for just absolutely steamrolling shite at the bottom of the league. And that sounds, you know what I mean? Listen, they might, it's not necessarily fun, but they win 5-0 every week. Do you know what I mean? It's fucking boring, in fact. But Liverpool, the way we play, it's great to watch. Even when it's a 0-0 like yesterday, we're still talking about all these attacking. We've spent nearly probably an hour here talking about attacking flair in a 0-0 game.
Yeah.
And that's the type of team Liverpool are, whereas Man City can crush a team 7-0 and you just like, well, I'm what? Like, just, yeah, there was no joy in that.
Yeah, and I think that the... that first half of the season, particularly that first couple of months, you know, we shouldn't forget that Liverpool's defence was finding its feet again. It really did have to find its feet again, and no more so than Virgil van Dijk, who, no matter how strong he is mentally after coming back from the injury that he'd had, it's only perfectly normal that there's going to be an element of him regaining that confidence, not just in his own play and his rhythm within his play, but actually his confidence that his injury is going to stand up, you know. So I think once you see Liverpool gain that momentum and gain that confidence and find that rhythm again, turn of the year, if not before, they've been unstoppable.
Yeah. In that second half, after Chelsea have had the little periods, there's then three or four more flashes from Diaz. There's a great ball from Alexander-Arnold into Robertson at one point that he could possibly do a little bit more with. There's a Jota shot, which to me had all the hallmarks when Keita fed him of the goal that wins the FA Cup. Angle was right. It was one which you probably shouldn't score, but it's the one that, you know, it just sneaks in the side.
You're already seeing the replays.
Yeah, exactly. I was watching the highlight when Keita put him in. I was watching the highlights package. Sadly, it doesn't quite creep in either from there. Milner comes on. We'll come on to him in a second, Mo. But there's the hitting the post twice. The Diaz one is one where you are. Listen, you know, you can't do much better than what he does, cracks it against the post. The Robertson one's the one that, you know, because I went down, by the way. I went, this is going to extra time. Went and got myself a pint of water from the water machine. Two noises, legged it back up. And the woman next to me said to me, don't go down now, you know, something could happen. I went, got 120 written all over this.
The water machine?
Yeah, yeah.
I paid £6.40 for 2 pints of water.
Yeah, no, I know. I did that. And then when I was walking past, I found the filling station where you could fill up a bottle. So I kept all my pint glasses and whacked them in.
Make it easy for you,
yeah. So I whacked it in, got me water filled up, and walked back up. And she said, you missed me at the post twice there. And I went, you're a liar.
I mean, like when I saw it was Robertson, I was very much like, this is very narrative for him to be the match winner. But then, and you see the replay, he comes off his shin pad, he doesn't even get his foot to it, and it's just like, oh, it would have been nice for the narrative if it had been Robertson, but actually, it would have been better if it had been a goal scorer who could have put the ball in the net. And when you have big chances in the 80-something minute, they always feel a little bit more like, because it's next goal wins the category. Yeah. And again, Chelsea never really got a chance to do that version of that. I can't remember. I don't know if I'm blocking them out. I don't remember any big Chelsea chances in that last 10.
No, it was all Liverpool last 10. They were back to not being able to get out, which I thought was quite interesting.
And again, it's almost like, I think this is one of the situations where having the League Cup against the same opponents that went all the way and we came out victorious really helped. I mean, we could go into it. I'm probably going to go into it at some point on another show, but psychology really did not help Chelsea in this whole game. There were lots of moments where psychology could have helped them and it didn't. I think about Salah going off. Think about the boost that gives to Chelsea, regardless of how you think he was playing in that game. It's Mo Salah. He's going off. And then at the beginning of extra time, Virgil van Dijk goes off. Virgil van Dijk! Like, the two players who most people talk about when you think about Liverpool, Salah and van Dijk, both gone off. Did Chelsea capitalise? No.
I think part of that, though, was the assurance of Liverpool, Kev, in that I suspect both Salah and Virgil van Dijk, if that's the Champions League final, I reckon they both play on, but at least play on for a period of time. Liverpool, there's an eye on. We've got a big game on Tuesday, possibly. There's an eye on. We might have a big game next week, and we've got a massive game coming up against Real Madrid. I think the assurance of the manager there and those players to go, it's all right, this. I've got to save myself.
But know what that is, though? I'm not sure they would stay on the Champions League final, you know, because if the levels drop, they're two unbelievable talents. Like, they're the two best players in the world in their positions, but there was no drop-off, or it's a minimal drop-off with the replacements. When Salah went off, it had all the hallmarks of when he went off against Real Madrid in Kiev, didn't it? And on that day, the whole end, everyone's shoulders just went, ugh. Because it was Adam Lallana we were bringing on. No disrespect to Lallana, but it's a clear drop-off from Mo Salah, isn't it? Whereas when Mo went off yesterday, you're just like, oh, I hope he's fit for the European Cup final, but we've still got today to win. And you're bringing players on like Jota, like Matip. These are players that would be in anyone else's starting 11, including Chelsea's. Mm-hmm. So when they go off, I think that assurance comes from the fact that you now trust the squad that we've got, I can never remember a time when I've been able to do that with a Liverpool team. And now you're taking, as you said, Demo, two of our best players. If you had to pick, you'd probably say they're our two best players, wouldn't you? taking them both off in an FA Cup final and still gone on to win. And there was no collective, ooh, or even the feeling of, oh, that's, as you said, psychologically, this could go against us here because you trust the others.
There were so many opportunities for that to happen. And like, I remember, because I didn't watch the, I basically get my head in my shirt when just immediately after Mané missed, so I didn't see what he did. But then I watched him go back to the halfway line, and someone made him laugh. I don't know who it was. Someone just said to him, it was just like, it must have just said to him, what the fuck was that? He just started laughing. But it's like, because you think about missing a penalty and that, and you think about all the times your team has missed a penalty, you think about the devastation, and you think about all that and how it can get to you. Nah. Not a bit of it. He was able to be like switched back on into Sadio mode. And yes, it was very much a little bit moment. And yes, he was very still disappointed at the end of the game and all that stuff. But he kind of felt that doesn't mean it's over. We've still got Alisson. And we have still got Alisson.
And it's for all. I think it was Milner who made him laugh, which segues nicely into the fact that it's Milner who comes on Stu. And, you know, I think Keita has a bit of hard line. I think he plays well. But I think he's got the thankless job of joining the attack more than do the midfield, and because Henderson and Thiago had that all swept up and looked after. Milner comes on. He's got a bit more of, I think, of a defined sort of midfield role. But don't get me wrong, he was absolutely different class. He just stepped up to the level of the game from the minute he was on the pitch. Flattened Reece James within the first 90 seconds. Like it was, you
loves
know,
it,
like,
he
you
know, loves it.
Absolutely flattened him. And Reece James got up like, is this fella for real? Is this,
is there not a, he was 40.
Yeah. Is there not a referee? He's just jogged away from that. He just flattened Reece James and it set the tone for what was a great performance with and without the ball.
Yeah, he was so entertaining to watch. I mean, there was that moment. Well, we all knew was coming. He was going to absolutely wallop someone as soon as he came on. That was just nailed on. And then there was not long after that, there was a chance of a Chelsea breakaway, and Milner, I think we'd had a corner or something, and Milner had stayed back and was around the halfway line, and as the ball broke free, he made sure it was his ball and he nearly sent it out the ground. It was a proper have it moment. You know, it was and so, you know, he felt his way into the game. And then, you know, once he had done that, he was class. He was great. I mean, listen, we all know the leadership he shows, and whether that's making someone laugh, whether that's some, you know, putting people at ease, or you know, showing real grit and determination. He also showed real quality. The ball he puts in for that, it's the Robertson chance.
Yeah,
in the
back post.
That is an unbelievable cross, by the way. I mean, Trent Alexander-Arnold would have been very, very, very proud of that. He was great, Milner, and it was so lovely to see actually him get to feel like he has contributed, because from that interview as well, I read that's the most important thing for him. He doesn't want to be seen as a passenger. He wants to be seen as someone who can actually bring something to the table in this dressing room. And we all know he does that just by being there and the things that he says, his presence, his leadership. But actually for him to feel like I contributed on the pitch as well is massive.
It's a big 50 minutes. He's arguably, for the 50 minutes he's on the pitch, I think he's arguably Liverpool's best player. I think he's helped by virtue of the fact that he only shared the pitch for 20 with Diaz. But he then, from there, also just steps up, takes the first penalty with a minimum of fuss as well. Everything about the performance was what Liverpool needed at that point, I think it's fair to say. I think Henderson and Thiago both acquit themselves excellently over the course of the game. They just needed, another pair of hands in there to ensure that Liverpool... I think Liverpool got into a bit of a mindset of, we're not losing this. And I think that was the right mindset to have at that point. Earlier in the game, it was, we're winning this. And then I think it went a little bit of, no, we're just not losing this because we back ourselves on the pens.
Yeah, and we know the danger that Chelsea still possess, regardless of how they've been playing. They can still bring it out at any one moment. But yeah, I have to give a shout out to Henderson as well. I was concerned about him lasting 120 minutes, and he did it and did it fantastically. And I think the timing of Milner coming in and the fact that they were able to kind of dovetail in that way did help both of them. And yeah, I love the fact that Milner still has his role. Like, I remember we were watching we did the team talk and watched the pre-match press conference, and Klopp picked up on the fact that the journalist who said, oh, Milner won the FA Cup with City, but he didn't get off the bench. And he's like, why would you have to say that bit? Because he knows that part matters to Milner. And like you said, he has to have a role. He has to be involved. And everyone knows what his role is when he comes on the pitch. He's taking the first penalty. There was never any doubt about who was taking, when we got to the shootout, no one's taking the first penalty. In fact, like, there's a really good thread on Twitter I read this morning from a sports psychologist who dissected what Klopp and Tuchel did in from the final whistle to the first 4 minutes. Klopp already knows who's taking the pens, and then he goes round individually to the players and says, which number do you want? Because he knows who's taking them, it's just watch order. Obviously, there are some that he already knows. Milner is always going to be number one. Whereas Tuchel, he's still kind of making his way. And like, Liverpool have done that. They've had the huddle. Everyone knows what's happening. He's done his 15-second speech. Done, out. And everyone's just chilling out. Whereas Tuchel, he's in the middle of the huddle, still trying to decide who's doing what. And it just conveys a very different message. Like, we know what we're doing. We know how to this bit goes. We can navigate it. And we will again.
The idea that we know what we're doing. Jordan Henderson turns 32 in June. Thiago Alcantara's just turned 31, Kev. Milner's on the pitch, 35 in there. For me, that's what underpins Liverpool's, you know, see the game out quite nicely through extra time. You never quite felt like a goal was coming, but you never felt like a goal was coming for either side by that point. It felt like a couple of races had been run. But on Henderson and on Thiago, you know, it's 120 minutes. They're that age. I thought they looked fine. You know, with five to go, I had no worries about either of them. I thought both looked like there is much in this game. And it's worth remembering, Chelsea bring N'Golo Kante on, for God's sake. Mm. And I was thinking, here we go. Yeah. You know what he's always like against us. But even he doesn't really impact it. Even he's not, you know, there's a lot to admire about Thiago. There's a lot to admire about Henderson. But just yesterday, the sheer fitness, the sheer level, the sheer consistency of both of them, I thought was just excellent.
Yeah, I think it's less surprising from Henderson than it is from Thiago. Just because, I'm not sure he's necessarily injury prone, but he just seems to have had a few little niggles, doesn't he? But when it's got to the business end of the season now, he's there all the time.
And last season as well.
Yeah, and he's just always there, and he's such a great footballer to watch. Like, if you enjoy football, watching him makes you happy. Like, even the neutrals must love watching him. That little shimmy he does with his hips when he's got someone in behind him. And everyone knows it's coming, but you just can't stop it. It's phenomenal. Henderson, you said before, if it was a Champions League final, you're not sure Salah goes off or Van Dijk, Henderson definitely wouldn't go off.
No. He'd
have one leg and he'd still be going because he's an absolute warrior. Total Liverpool legend and the perfect captain for this club and for this team in particular, because you've got players like Milner, obviously, who's probably like another manager, really. And in any other team, he'd probably be the spiritual leader, but it's not in this one. It's Henderson who does that job. But that's to say that's a quality is not to do as a service to his football, because he's fantastic on that football pitch, mate. He's another one where if you watch football, you understand football, you see what he does. And it's not just, he's got really good incisive passing, but it's just everything else as well. He's all over the pitch. He's always talking to somebody. It might be our team, it might be their team, it might be the referee, but he is always talking to someone, and he's always affecting the game, whether he's on the ball or not. And the two of them together, a fantastic partnership.
They're brilliant at space in this game, I think, Stu. They fill the space brilliantly, part of as different things happen. Thiago and Henderson just keep filling space absolutely incredibly well. And for me, you know, that's the testament to them. We always do the thing, and when you're in the ground, you always do a big pitch. All the jokes, you know, big pitch Wembley, but it is quite a big pitch. They just keep filling the space, the two of them. They looked after the whole team brilliantly. You know, for me, it's another Liverpool win that is based on midfield.
It's intelligence as well. I mean, we talk about the physical assets there, and you know, I mentioned the intelligence of Diaz before, but this Liverpool team's full of really intelligent players, and you know, it is a big pitch. It's massive, and it's a you know, bloody hot day, and 120 minutes, and it's not easy to minimise the spaces there, but they know how to do it. But you know, just something on Jordan Henderson, he is 32. Is that right? 32.
Mm-hmm. He turns 32 in a couple of weeks.
32 in a couple of weeks. He's now won everything that there is to win. He's been captain of Liverpool for how many years now? You know, about 7 years?
Since 14, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And somehow he's still managed to be perceived in some people's eyes as the underdog. He still has this aura of the underdog. That's incredible. Yeah. And I think, by the way, it's a disgraceful underestimation of his footballing abilities. But what it also, to me, demonstrates, and hats off to him here, I'm not sure there's a player out there that I can recall who has the level of mental strength, resilience, determination, leadership, character, call it whatever you want. The lad has got it in spades. I cannot think of a captain in the Premier League who I would want captaining of any other team. Yeah. I wouldn't swap any other team's captain for Jordan Henderson. Do you think of the players that Liverpool got, the authorities Liverpool have got in that dressing room, they all bow down to Jordan Henderson. He's the man.
Mm. And one of the things that I thought was really, really fascinating about that, and the kind of contrast between the two, is the penalties. Because we all know that Jordan Henderson's had a few dodgy experiences with penalty shootouts. He was taken off in the Euros by England because they didn't want him to take one. I suspect he did come off in the League Cup final, didn't he? I don't think he finished the game.
No, he
didn't finish the game. So this was the first time he's finished the game. First time there was a chance for him to put his hand up. And there was something that I noticed, I think it was Jermaine Gina said about Azpilicueta, where it was like, he's not the best taker, but he's the captain. He has to take responsibility. He has to stand up for it. It's like, no, you're the captain. Taking responsibility means I know that there are better players than me to take this, so you go and do it.
That's such a stupidly British attitude. You're the captain. You can't take penalties for shit, but you've got to take one because you've got the armband.
Exactly. Ridiculous. It's like, the captain has to do the best thing to win the game. Yeah. And when we were talking about leadership and we're talking about roles, it's almost like he subconsciously gave the armband to Milner for the penalty shootout. So this is your bit. He was on the halfway line, obviously talking to people, what have you. But this is where you lead. This is where I lead. And it's very similar to Klopp. He's not has to be all about me. I don't have to take all the credit. I just want us to win. And that goes through the whole team.
It goes through the whole team. Indeed, I want them to win on Tuesday.
That'd be nice.
Would be nice, yeah. We're recording this before City have played, just to be really crystal clear, although Kev did his best.
To be fair, did
they kick off at 12? They kick off at 2. Yeah. So we're recording this before City have played, so we don't know anything about that game. And as part of the manager, when he in a really weird way, Kev, he probably wouldn't think it was the worst thing in the world if City just happened to be 4 points clear.
Do you know what? I had the exact same thought myself, because don't get me wrong, fuck me, imagine winning the league from the position we're in now. That would be, or imagine next Sunday, mate. Next Sunday, it'd be a fucking four day day. Yeah,
we'd have to just call like Monday and Tuesday off. Like the City, would have to close
Sunday one, Sunday two, Sunday three. We'd have to call them because it'd just be unbelievable.
We'd just hand the keys over to the Evertonians for a couple of days.
Honestly, what I really want to happen is West Ham to somehow batter them 5-0. I don't think it's going to happen, but if it did, fucking hell! Imagine what Tuesday would be like at Southampton. But I understand, like, it's not a defeatist attitude. I think it's more realistic to think, well, do we really want to be in a situation where we still don't win the league, but we've put our absolute bollocks on the line on Tuesday, had to do it again on Sunday, and then have a European Cup to win 6 days later? Or if they do get to a situation where they just tonk West Ham today and it's all over, we can say, okay, well, we've got the biggest prize in world football to go for here, and we can just concentrate solely on that.
I think he pretty much plays his Champions League final team against Wolves under all circumstances. So he pretty much plays that team against Wolves, if he can, depending on fitness with Salah and maybe Fabinho. But I think he'd go as close as he can to that. I think he'd love to be able to do 10 changes against Southampton. But if City do drop any points, or maybe even if they don't, you feel like those footballers won't let him. You feel like those footballers will be saying, whilst this is still live, we want to go for everything. Because that's the mentality he's instilled, Stu. And I've got no sense whatsoever as we sit here what team takes the pitch against Southampton. No sense at all. It wouldn't surprise me if it ends up being one where you see Minamino, to use an extreme example. And it wouldn't surprise me if you see Liverpool's first 11 all patched up and ready to go. The manager says afterwards the best physiotherapy's winning.
I think Klopp will be the grown-up in the room about it. I still do, even if West Ham pull out, you know, the shock of shocks today. Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in, kind of thing. I still think he'll balance it, but I think Liverpool will win anyway. I think Liverpool will look at it now and go, three games to go, win the three. That guarantees the Champions League, and we'll see where the chips fall in the league. Keep City honest, win the three. It's a good habit to keep winning. Mm. And I think Liverpool's depth of squad now has the ability to go away from home to Southampton. Even if that is their last home game of the season, it's for Southampton, and do the business. We've got players there, you know. We're talking about Mark Noble's swan song today is goodbye. Well, Southampton away could be Divock Origi's goodbye. Yeah. we've all said he might have a move still to play in this race. Maybe that'll be his moment.
I think there's that to come. I think that's a very good point. The other thing that Klopp can say, if they are saying we want to play, we can say, well, look what's just happened in the last game. We've had three guys come off because they were, well, Salah and Van Dijk and then Fabinho in the game before, all on the edge, kind of felt something, had to take them off as a precaution. We got away with it. We can't keep getting away with it. So if these players are saying, possibly these players, like, no, I need you to sit your ass down.
Yeah, I think the players, and we all say, do you want to play in every game? And of course they do. But if you're saying to me that the players like, nah, I don't care, I'll just run and run like a dog, and they're not thinking, do I really want to get injured against Southampton on a Tuesday night in a game that doesn't mean anything?
Or that might not mean anything.
So basically, in my opinion, it all depends on the results. If City tonk West Ham, then it's a totally different game, totally different mindset. And I don't think, it's not the end of the world if you just win the European Cup.
Just win three trophies and get 90 points.
It's still quite the season. So I reckon...
There's your headline.
I was going to say,
quite the season.
So, exactly. If the players like, oh yeah, I want to go to Southampton and win. Of course they do. Southampton are shit though. Minamino and Origi could take Southampton apart. But if we need to win 9-0, then the main men are getting there. And if we do need, it's one of those situations where the results for City totally impacts everything. Because if City do drop points, just imagine the buzz. God forbid, imagine City got beat today. Imagine how re-energised we'd be as fans. Imagine how re-energised the players would be. They'd be thinking, if Leicester can put 9 past these, we can put 29 past them. And I'll tell you what, I've talked myself into this here. Come on, Marco.
Go to do it, though. It's not bad, though. Yeah. If you think about Gomez, you think about Matip, you think about Milner, these are all playing. Origi.
Keita comes off on 70.
I think the other thing we can remember is that, yes, the City of result does make a difference, but they would have known from relatively long out that this was going to be two claims close together and it was always going to be a tight turnaround. And we saw the last time that was the case was when we were going to Newcastle after the Villarreal game, and what we got was Milner coming in. And I still think that Klopp kind of had Milner in mind for that game from a while out and possibly told him, we're going to need you for this one. There's a few guys who haven't played a lot recently who could have been like, look, Southampton's going to be your game. We're going to need you. This is where you contribute to this run. We need you to be there to put us over the line.
Okay, then. Download the app if you haven't. Go to the live shows if you haven't. You to me are everything. The sweetest song that I can sing. Sports Social Podcast Network.